Are you off? Be seated. Thank you.
Afternoon. Achieve for Petitioner Cody Gamble. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
And as you know, Ms. McCletchie, we still do the 17 minutes total argument, so you'll have 2 minutes uninterrupted, and then move into the remaining 15 minutes with questions coming from the justices as they see fit. Okay?
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. You can begin.
As a preliminary matter, I just want to alert the court to the fact that I did a filing yesterday after consulting with my client in light of the court's ruling in the Sister Nestor case. The matter after remand, the stay issue is now moot, so that's not before the court from petitioner's perspective.
Thank you.
What is before the court is NRS 125.110, the divorce record statute. It provides for mandatory sealing of almost all records in divorce cases upon mere request of a party. It's the sister statute, NRS 125.080, the divorce proceeding statute, that this court struck down in Falcone and just addressed again in the Nestor case. Just like the divorce proceeding statute, the divorce records sealing statute is unconstitutional. It violates the First Amendment presumption in favor of access because it prevents district courts from applying the strict scrutiny balancing test. There simply is no basis to distinguish family court records from the family court proceedings at issue in Falcone. With regard to the logic and experience test, it applies to family court records in the exact same way that it applied to family court proceedings. With regard to the experience aspect of the logic and experience test, this court in the Falcone case detailed the reasons why the experience test supported access to family court proceedings. In that discussion, this court cited a law review article and quoted from that law review article and noted that the trend in the case law has been clear. Divorce court records are open to the public, and the privacy rights of the individual must yield to the First Amendment when all factors are equal. With regard to the logic aspect of the logic and the experience test, this court obviously also addressed that issue in Falcone. In addition to the court accountability and transparency issues that are especially important in Nevada because of elected judges, this court also discussed the importance of the providing access to pro se litigants like Mr. Gamble in particular. This court said that access provides litigants with examples of what they can expect in their own case. For practical reasons, that point applies with even more importance when we're talking about records instead of proceedings. And that's because pro se litigants can't be expected to go to court and provide and sit and observe court proceedings all day long, just like attorneys do when they litigate cases. They should have access to samples of motions and other filings so they can fairly litigate this case. And as this court discussed in Falcone, there are a lot of pro se litigants in family court. The arguments made by respondent to distinguish this statute from the preceding sealing statute at issue in Falcone all fail. First of all, it doesn't matter that it's all records. It's almost all records from divorce court proceedings. And the First Amendment presumed right of access applies to all the records, not just the pleadings in cases. Courts are supposed to apply this balancing test, not the legislature, on a case-by-case basis.
Yes. Ask a quick question.
Sure.
I just want to make sure I understand Mr. Gamble's position, because that's Mr. Gamble wants access to his own court file, correct? I mean, that's certainly one issue. The other is, does Mr. Gamble want the whole world to access his own court file? Is that his position here today? Is it his, I want to talk about his case, we're talking about broader principles, but does he want the whole world to have access to his court file and his children's information and his ex-wife's information?
Mr. Gamble's position that if any information is to be sealed in this case, should be sealed on a specific information by information basis rather than in blanket fashion, as was done in this case pursuant to the divorce record statute. But Mr. Gamble's position in his is twofold. First of all, he wants fair access to his own records. And while there is now a pro se tool in place that allows him electronic access, at the time that he filed this petition, he did not have equal access.
Well, I'll be frank. I don't think a party accessing their own record is controversial. The question is with regard to the sealing of these matters. At least I can't speak for my colleagues, and just that's my question.
Well, there's two things. Because those records were sealed pursuant to the statute, even his own records he couldn't get fair access to. And even counsel for the respondent at the appendix on pages 375, 376 at a hearing on this matter mentioned this. He's not the only one who has had access getting his own access to his own file. And the 8th Judicial District could get rid of the pro se access tool tomorrow. But Mr. Gamble, and he discussed this issue, these issues at pages 15 through 17 of his pro se initial petition. He discussed what this court discussed in Falcone, and that's for the fair administration of justice. Mr. Gamble thinks that people should have access to his files if they're not confident, if they're not determined to be confidential pursuant to the First Amendment test. But he also should have access to other divorce court files so he can find samples. He explained to me recently that he now has limited counsel to help him with the upcoming evidentiary hearing in the custody with regard to the custody issues in the case. So he's hired counsel that to help him get access to the CPS file. But he's still doing a lot of the work in the case on his own. He wanted to file an order to show cause. He can't easily find samples from other cases provide that for him to be able to look at and to draft an OSC, to understand what OSC motions look like, and to understand the legal bases for those.
Are you arguing also, though, that under Falcone, one of the things that Falcone recognized is that public access to civil trial enhances the quality and safeguards the integrity of the fact-finding process? Is that part of his argument for standing in this case, that he thinks the closure is unnecessary, but that it undermines the fairness and integrity of his own proceeding?
Yes, he does. That is absolutely correct. And Falcone does talk about that. The fact that when court proceedings are conducted in the public and when court records are subject to public scrutiny, it enhances fairness. And that's absolutely true about his own records as well as records in other cases. With regards to standing, I want to be clear. In First Amendment court access cases, all that is required to have standing is to want access and not be able to get it. Mr. Gamble's pro se petition should be interpreted liberally by the court. And Mr. Gamble talked at pages 15 through 17 about the access to justice issues that are caused when pro se litigants can't access court records. The idea,
Ms. McCletchie, but was his failure inability, was his inability to access those records caused by the statute you're challenging? Because the statute says on its face parties are able to access their own files.
Yes. So the respondent argues that much like the court is asking now, the respondent argues that Cody's ability to electronically access these sealed documents is not a function of NRS 125.110, but an administrative or technical limitation on access to sealed electronic documents by pro se parties, which is universally applicable to all sealed documents. But in his view, these documents were sealed inappropriately, and if they weren't sealed inappropriately, he would have had fair access. And both, he still doesn't have fair access because he doesn't have fair access to the CPS document, but he also, again, doesn't have access to other records. Respondents' arguments about standing, I think, impose an onerous standing on First Amendment court access issues that would make it very hard for pro se litigants or others to seek relief from this court. All that anybody challenging closure needs to do is to explain that they want access and they couldn't get it, and there is no other injury or harm that they need to show. That not getting access is in and of itself the harm. So there is no further requirement. In the NPRI case, this court discussed the Schwartz case that the respondent cited in their answer. And in that case, in the Schwartz case, there's three factors. The court's well aware. One is the issue of significant public importance. Two is that there's a challenge to an unconstitutional expenditure. And third, you have to have the appropriate party. Those are the three requirements for constitutional standing. In NPRI, the court said, look, the second element isn't here. But making sure that separation of powers cases are justiciable is an important issue, and that this court dispensed with the second Schwartz factor. And so I think under the jurisprudence governing court access cases, there is standing. But I think additionally, the court could, similar to what it did in NPRI, is say, look, there may not be a challenge to an unconstitutional expenditure, but the other two factors of Schwartz apply here. Obviously, this is an issue of significant public importance. That's also a reason why a writ should issue. There's a beneficial interest that Mr. Gamble also asserts that gives him the ability and standing specifically to seeking writ relief. But I think with regard to that factor, the district courts need clarity. I think Falcone is clear. It's hard for me to understand how the logic of Falcone can be applied in a way that doesn't require access to divorce court records. My reading of Falcone is that all civil cases, including family court cases, are subject to the presumption in favor of access. The authorities that we cite make clear there is no reason to treat proceedings any differently than records. But it's
so,
not
Ms. McCletchie, I'm sorry to interrupt again. I just want to be clear then that what you're asking for is, so yes, like to a holding that, like in Falcone, there's the public right of access under the First Amendment. And then similar to our recent decision in the Nestor writ proceeding, that to the extent there's a request to close records, that three-part test should be applied by the court to evaluate whether the party seeking closure has met its burden.
Exactly. And this court, I think in the Nestor case, this court appropriately remanded to the district court to make clear to district court that the idea that Falcone said that everything is open, always open, is entirely wrong. What Falcone says is that you can't have blanket rules against access. You can't have categorical rules against access. And district courts are supposed to exercise their discretion, and they're supposed to consider the privacy interests or other interests that are being asserted and balance those interests within the constitutional strict scrutiny framework.
Ms. McCletchie, how broad of a brush do you think Falcone provided? So are we talking about also dependency cases? Are we talking about delinquency cases? How broad of a brush is in our toolkit? I'm mixing metaphors now.
There's a footnote in Falcone that I believe talks about juvenile justice cases and dependency cases. And those issues aren't before the court today, but what I think Falcone says is that all civil proceedings are subject to the presumption in favor of access. And that ruling is consistent with the great wealth of authority following Richmond newspapers. I also think Falcone explicitly holds that family court proceedings are not an exception to the presumption in favor of access to civil proceedings. I think that the reasoning of Falcone and the ample case law making clear that when we're talking about court access issues, that records are treated the same as proceedings. I think what Falcone says is there is no exception for family court. And just as all, in my view, civil records and proceedings are presumptively open to the public, records must be treated the same exact way as Falcone. That's the question before the court today. I don't think it furthers judicial efficiency for family court litigants to have to get rulings on every specific court rule that every court in the state of Nevada might enact that address family court issues or specific records in family court. I think Falcone was very clear about, and Nestor was very clear about, the scope of the right of access as it applies to proceedings. And I think this court should make it clear that presumption applies in favor of records with the same caveats in that footnote in Falcone. I understand those issues aren't specifically before the court. Well, they weren't
divorce
family court.
Wasn't before the court in Falcone either, but we
court to do today is to hold NRS 125.110 unconstitutional for the very same reasons that the sister statute regarding proceedings is unconstitutional. Do I think that the logic extends beyond NRS 125.080 and .110? Yes. Do I think it's possible that there are some exceptions that aren't before the court today to the presumption in favor of access? I think that's a question for another day. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Joe Reynolds, and with me is co-counsel Shannon Wilson. We represent the real party in interest, Leanne Nestor, who is a single mother of two young children, and she greatly values her privacy and the privacy of her two young children. The price of obtaining a divorce in Nevada should not be that all the world, including strangers, gain access to the most intimate private details of your life. And access to courts does not mean access to private individuals. The Nevada legislature made a policy determination in enacting 125.110 62 years ago. It has been the law in Nevada for over six decades. It does not violate the First Amendment, and Ms. Nestor respectfully asks this court to deny the petition. And as a threshold matter, there is a standing issue in this case. There's been no showing of personal injury or personal harm to the petitioner in this case. This court has repeatedly stated that a generalized allegation of harm is insufficient and that a bedrock requirement of justiciability, even in writ petitions, must be shown before the court will properly reach its merits. 125.110 expressly provides that a party to a divorce action has right to all the records. The petitioner is a party in this case. Of all the people in the world who don't have standing, it is the petitioner, because he clearly has not been harmed by this statute. If he has been had difficulty or denied access to his records, it is not by operation of 125.110. There may be administrative issues, but that does not mean that the statute at issue before this court is unconstitutional. And no standing exception applies. Oregon, under this court's public importance exception, under Schwartz in its line of cases, Cannizzaro, the three requirements of there being an issue of separation of powers, public expenditure, or being in the best person to advocate for it, those are not present here.
Mr. Reynolds, if the we're past 15. If the case file were not sealed, he would be able to access them online. Is that not true?
I don't know administratively about the online or not, but I can speak, Justice Kadich, that it's not a preclusion or due to a prohibition of 125.110.
Well, I'll try again.
Okay.
Were this case file not sealed because of 125.110, he would have access rather than the complaints he's made about his difficulties with access, correct?
I believe that is correct. I don't know administratively. I don't want to say anything incorrect to the court, but I believe but for them being sealed, attorneys or others would be able to access them as other cases.
Thank you.
I also have a question on the standing point, which is, and it's similar to the question I asked your colleague. The Falcone case expressly recognizes that the integrity and fairness of proceedings are enhanced by open court proceedings, and that, and I'm quoting from it, that Public access to civil trials enhances the quality and safeguards the integrity of the fact-finding process. So posit that you're a party in a case and the court closes the courtroom to everybody and you feel you're getting hometowned by that and that there is an integrity-inducing feature to having the court be open and that that is constitutionally inappropriate that the court is closing the courtroom for reasons that you want to challenge. Why would you not have standing to challenge a statute that mandates that result in your case?
Because, Justice Pickering, there has been no harm. He has not been to construe standing, whether it's organizational standing or some type of standing exception, in such an instance would mean that anyone in the public could.
So he's a litigant. He's right. Affected. He cares about the integrity of the court proceeding that he is engaged in, and it's critically important to him and his family in his view. And he believes that having open court enhances the integrity of that proceeding by bringing an outside check to bear on that integrity. I'm perplexed by how an individual whose life is at stake in this proceeding or whose relations with his family are at stake doesn't have standing to say it's not fair to me to close this courtroom and make me run the risk of having things happen that wouldn't happen if it weren't closed. Now, I'm not saying that is true, but that is his perception, and I think he has the right to have that court open because of the right to an open proceeding.
Justice Pickering, if I'm answering or understanding your question correctly, pursuant to this court's holding in Falcone, the district court does have the discretion to ensure that there is an open proceeding where appropriate. And I think jumping to, whether 125, 110 is narrowly tailored or whether that openness function is still served by this statute at issue, it is 125, 110 is very different than 125, 080 in terms of its scope and in the access allowed.
Well, the complaint is public record and the final adjudication is public record, but everything in between is not public record under 110, as I understand that statute.
I respectfully submit that actually every our reading of the statute is the pleadings are open.
But the pleadings are the complaint and the answer, right?
And every order of the district court upon a motion is open.
Right, but the motion itself isn't. So how is someone to judge the motion if by the order if they don't know what was argued in the motion?
The public will have access to what is being claimed, what is being defended against, all orders issued by the district court, the findings of the district court that are also made in those proceedings. There is openness when we're going to serving the constitutional function of the First Amendment and right of access. It is so that the public can have a check on what the judiciary is doing.
I mean, the judiciary has the power to protect true privacy interests on motion constitutionally. The point is you can't judge an order if you can't cross-check it against whether or not it's a fair outcome on the arguments and matters that were presented to the court.
In our position, Justice Pickering, is the petitioner clearly has the right to do that in this case. He can do that, and he's the only person. He definitely has standing to observe all matters and all pleadings in his case, and he's the only person.
But he has to pay more for them than your client, correct?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor, in terms, again, the administrative pieces, but I would submit that that's not an operation of the constitutionality of 125.10.
Fair enough. Thanks.
So, Mr. Reynolds, is it your position then that because Mr. Gamble is supposed to have access under the statute, he doesn't have standing, but if Mr. Falcone comes to court again and said, thank you very much for opening up the court proceedings, now let us see the files, he would have standing, but someone who's an actual party would not?
Theoretically, yes.
Okay.
And as this court, entertained the Falcone decision and ruled upon it. But we submit that the court should decide the case that's currently before the court, and that case isn't before the court today.
Correct. Thank you.
If this court disagrees and finds that there is standing.
Mr. Rounds, I'm sorry. Okay. I just have a question for you. So if Mr. Gamble had gone down to the family court clerk's office, would he have been able to access the file in that way?
I don't want to speak too broadly, Justice Bell, about the administrative aspects of it, especially a pro se person, but it is the position of our client. We do not contest or dispute that as a pro se litigant, he should have access to his files in this case. That is not our position to argue in any way to deny him that. Ours is whether the general public at large should have access to all those files. So if there has been a problem or any kind of barrier to those, we are not arguing against that. Ours is that it is not the operation of the statute.
But he can't look at somebody else's files for examples of how hearings were handled and what papers were submitted in another case that's similar to his under 110.
If one of the parties requests that it's closed, no, not all of them. But with respect to the Falcone decision in what this court held, the question is, why are divorce proceedings different than all other civil proceedings? And I submit to the court that there are competing interests at play. It is not where the First Amendment analysis is just being looked at in a vacuum. And marriage is a fundamental right, has been clearly recognized by the United States Supreme Court, the Obergefell decision. There are also encompassed in it a zone of privacy that has been recognized by the United States Supreme Court in Griswold v. Connecticut. And while divorce proceedings are ending a marriage, it's axiomatic that parties going into a divorce proceeding are still married, and that the issues at play during the dissolution of the marriage were still protected within that marital relationship. There is a privacy interest at stake here where it's not just the First Amendment kind of coming in and allowing all access. And we'd submit that while Falcone may have allowed a member of the public to, say, stand on the public sidewalk and view in the window of that relationship to keep the judiciary in check, it doesn't mean you get to walk in that house and start looking through the cabinet or looking through the dresser drawers or even the laundry hamper. That access is far beyond what the First Amendment provides. And I would note, even in this courtroom,
why would we not have judicial decision-making and discretion apply to that? Why would we say proceedings are presumptively open, but records are not? I mean, in the same manner that we tried through Falcone to educate the family court bench that you can close things, you just need to do a proper analysis and then make a proper decision about it. Why wouldn't we do that with records? Why would records be different?
Yeah, Chief Justice Hernan, the initial answer is the Nevada legislature has already spoken to this. And they enacted 125, 110 in 1963 to address this very issue. In the records at play in divorce actions are different. Nevada has a different history of our law in this state than other jurisdictions, specifically surrounding divorce. But tax records, business valuations, health records, HIPAA information, Social Security information, PSI reports, child school reports, adult crime and child crime sex victim information. There's a whole list of documents. As a matter of law, we've either allowed the U.S. Congress or the Nevada legislature to declare confidential. And simply because those documents are maybe in the hands of the executive branch, once they come into the judiciary branch, they don't lose all those vestiges of confidentiality. And Chief Justice Hernan, that the question then becomes, would this, a extension of Falcone open that, approximately 42 family law judges, district court judges throughout the state, have to do a balancing test and exercise their discretion each and every time a family court litigant wants to have an exhibit sealed? there's a practical implication on that premise that would theoretically be a flood of writ petitions and a flood of inconsistency. And when we're looking at somebody who is in a divorce, it is the most traumatic, stressful, uncertain times of their lives. And 125.110 provides certainty that when you at least enter into divorce proceeding, you know what your neighbor is going to see, you know what a stranger is going to see, and you know what they're not going to see. And while there is an access to the general public at play, there's also an access to the people who are parties before the court. A civil court at its best is solving problems for people who need help solving problems. And that if somebody who's facing a divorce has to question whether they have to stand naked to all the world in all aspects of their lives, there's a chilling effect in that. So before this court and in looking at this statute, it's not just the public access to view. It's that actual people who need court's help in solving their problems also needing access. And I would, back to your question, Chief Justice, the legislature decided that. And it has been the law, and it presumably worked for 60 plus years without being disturbed. The First Amendment hasn't changed, and this law hasn't changed. The only thing that has changed, you know, is technology.
Is now someone is arguing to us that it violates the First Amendment. I don't think that happened before.
Justice Kadish, I don't know all the history of it, but I can say at least it has not been amended and have not found an opinion from this court that has squarely addressed the constitutionality of it, and would submit that speaks for itself. These bedrock documents have not changed. The bedrock law has not changed. Our culture has changed. We have cameras, video cameras, microphones, and all aspects of people's lives. Yet privacy is still of paramount importance, as is the First Amendment. And what 125.110 does is it does strike that balance. So even, you know, Justice Pickering, if you conclude that there is standing, we submit that 125.110 is different than 125.080 because it does have a narrow
exception. How do you defend it as narrowly tailored? Let's credit that there's First Amendment issues. Like, to me, I'm not sure where you'd go with narrowly tailored in the list of documents that you recited and some of the concerns about private information. I'm not sure where you would be if you had a narrowly tailored statute, but one that says the pleadings and the orders and the final judgment you can read, but nothing else, so you can't get any of the context. I mean, you could have a much more narrowly tailored statute, and it may, and that may be the answer. Would that be an option, do you think?
It may be, but I would submit that would be before the legislature. And whether 125.110 is imperfect, it is good enough to withstand constitutional scrutiny.
Tell me how that could be possibly, oh, you're over your time, but could it be, make a defense quickly on how that could be considered narrowly tailored.
Chief Justice, yes, please. Thank you. To answer your question, we believe that it is because it delineates what is public action, meaning official court action, what the judge rules, what his or her signature is on, what is file stamped, versus what is merely being submitted by the parties, and findings of the court, meaning its rationale is public.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you.
The statute's not narrowly tailored, and as interpreted by this very firm in the order at appendix page 84, it's interpreted to mean that all documents, records, proceedings, and evidence, including exhibits and transcripts of testimony in the above entitled actions, shall be sealed pursuant to NRS 125.110. Although it has a few exceptions, for example, for third parties who need it for the, I guess, really the only exception other than pleadings and court orders is third parties can access information if they can show they need it for evidence in other cases. It doesn't balance the First Amendment interest at all. It doesn't mention the First Amendment. Opposing counsel argued that my argument would mean that any member of the public could try to get access to records and could come before this court and would have standing. And that is true. Any member of the public who tries to get access to court records and is denied has standing. No further injury is required. However, Mr. Gamble, who's also a single parent and a firefighter, did suffer specific harm. When he didn't have any electronic access, he could only go in person during court hours, which was very difficult for him.
Did Mr. Gamble actually try to access a different court file other than his own?
Yes, and he just recently tried to access, for example, documents because he's trying to file an order to show cause, and he can't find any except on the self-help page on the district court site, and there's usually only one example, and sometimes those examples are antiquated. Mr. Gamble, as you can tell by the petition, does look at samples and does a fairly good job. He found some samples, I think, in Nevada Supreme Court petitions, but he couldn't go except in person. He still, to this day, can't get the CPS file. He still, if he wants to access them electronically, has to pay 50 cents a page, as Justice Pickering pointed out. The only last point I want to make is the legislature cannot circumvent the First Amendment, and any harm that my learned opposing counsel discussed that might befall the parties in this case or other parties if access is granted can be considered by courts on a case-by-case basis, as they do day in and day out with motions to seal in other civil proceedings involving, for example, sexual assault victims in civil cases. Courts can do this. They can apply their discretion. They just need to do so on a case-by-case basis pursuant to the First Amendment standards. Thank you.